This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas with a bit of pop culture thrown in for the crack. Boy, oh boy, what a week we have for you. Batten down the hatches, turn off your phone, pull across the curtains, tell your mates that you're not their mates anymore. Because this week, it's a doozy for both streaming and cinema content. Folks, it's mad stuff. It's just too much stuff. We're going to start with the big screen this week, because finally, the 2024 box office has awoken from its slumber with a bit of a bang. So, shall we begin?
You've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades.
Luke!
My family's been fighting them for centuries.
Your blood comes from dukes and great houses. Here, we're equal. What we do for the benefit of all.
Well, I'd very much like to be equal to you.
Maybe I'll show you the way.
Dune Part 2 continues Denis Villeneuve's adaptation of the classic 1960s sci-fi novels of Frank Herbert. Coming some 2.5 years after Dune 1 was released, Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, and a few sandworms return for this space war epic. Following the fall of House Atreides, the second movie picks up literally from the final scene of the first movie, which I would definitely recommend watching it again. It's available on Netflix for you to get back in the zone. And then off you go. Go and get ready for 2 hours and 45 minutes of space opera awesomeness. Oh my God. What a beautiful thing. I know. 2 hours, 45 minutes. Some people already running for the door. Well, fear not. I left the cinema wishing it had been 4 hours. But then again, I'm a bit weird. If the first movie was about the world building and the character development, this one adds in a whole lot more stunning action set pieces while continuing to let its characters grow and its cinematography shine. This is Chalamet's and Zendaya's movie. They are both brilliant leads and their story is the glue of this series. Austin Butler also rocks up as a quite insane and unhinged new villain and is a fantastic addition. And I have to give a shout out to Javier Bardem. Oh my God, what a dude, what a dude. The movie for me at times resembled such classics as Lord of the Rings, Lawrence of Arabia and The Empire Strikes Back. And yes, is an absolute must-see on the biggest screen possible. Again, beautiful sweeping cinematography, so gorgeous, astonishing special effects and engaging well-developed characters. I cannot recommend this one enough. Denis Villeneuve, I firmly believe, is now becoming a real threat to Christopher Nolan's highbrow epic movie throne. That's Dune Part 2, or to some folks, Dune Part 2, now in cinemas.
Are you hot burning? Lisa! Does he have more of a basketball bod or a football bod?
He doesn't play sports. I tend to his grave. I talk to him.
I wish I was with you.
That's really weird, Lisa.
You hear that?
I'm sure it's the girl next door. She's very odd.
Less epic and also landing in cinemas this week is what appears to be a rom-com in the vein of Warm Bodies and based loosely, very loosely on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, written by Diablo Cody. Lisa Frankenstein, yes, is none of the above. This comedy horror film stars Catherine Newton as a misunderstood teenage goth girl who is in love with a Victorian era corpse and works to make him into the man of her dreams through various dark methods. Cole Sprouse plays the Frankenstein-esque zombie monster and love interest. Okay, where do I begin? This movie is a classic case of 80s neon-style over substance. It looks great. I mean, it looks fantastic. But as I kind of hinted, it fails to deliver on the expected fun rom-com vibe of its trailer. It's a surprisingly dark Heathers-esque monster comedy that in no way fulfills its potential and is it's quite violent. It's a violent, violent movie, folks. Weirdly, though, despite all this, it does give off all the moods and vibes of a cult classic in the making. Unfortunately, that'll be more down the line than straight out of the gate. Universal's Dark Universe is such a weird place to be. After seeing an exciting upturn with the 2020s The Invisible Man, it has sadly then driven itself off a cliff with a series of misfires like Renfield, The Last Voyage of the Demeter, and now this. Here's hoping they'll lean into the more serious side of their horror monsterverse, as some of these comedies just are not working. And I know Demeter wasn't a comedy, but you know what? Having seen it, it might as well have been. The arrival of Abigail later this year and Wolfman in 2025 will be the next attempts to correct course these classic IPs. I have a lot of faith in Abigail. Please just be a bit of crack. But for now, this may be a hit among teens or possibly ignored until it lands on streaming. Either way, Lisa Frankenstein is now in cinemas. And just a quick shout out for a very small release. It's in screening in Diff on March 1st and then is having a very small limited release in, as far as I know, Lighthouse, Palace in Galway. That's Brendan Gleeson's Farewell to Hughes's. To some, it was an unassuming pub on a side street behind the forecourts in Dublin city centre, but to musicians, dancers, singers and listeners, it was a mecca of traditional music for over 35 years. In 2021, Hughes's pub closed its doors for the last time, and here in this documentary, filmed over 5 days in January 2022, Gleeson records and interviews various musicians, dancers, singers and owners about the whole scene. This is a 60-minute documentary, and it's a quite poignant look at one of those Dublin landmarks you kind of take for granted, and then one day it's just gone, shut down. Despite not being the biggest trad fan, I'm more of a doom folk man myself, I found this to be quite an enjoyable documentary which showed a different side to the pub, which was definitely less touristy and seemed to be more of an organic trad scene. Gleeson, as you would expect, is wonderful as both an interviewer and a player of music, and his love for the establishment and its traditions of music shines throughout. That's, you know, a little small release there, both in Diff and limited around the country in cinemas. That's Brendan Gleeson's Farewell to Hughes's. And there you go. Short, sweet and to the point. That is your cinema for the week. Over on streaming, if you thought Dune Part 2 was the only sweeping epic drama released this week, well, think again.
Do not be fooled by our politeness. Our bows are made of rituals. Death is in our air, and sea and earth. Just remember, we live and we die. We control nothing beyond that.
The historical epic Shogun lands on Disney Plus and is an absolutely gripping and enthralling series. I mean, holy moly. Based on James Clavell's 1975 novel, which some folks of a certain vintage will remember was previously made into a TV miniseries with, yes, the lovely, lovely Richard Chamberlain. Ah, yes, the 80s, an innocent time. Set in feudal Japan in the year 1600 during a brewing civil war, Lord Yoshi Torunaga, played here by Hiroyuki Sanada, is fighting for his life as his enemies on the Council of Regents unite against him. When a mysterious European ship is found marooned in a nearby fishing village, we are introduced to John Blackthorne, played by Cosmo Jarvis, who is then taken in by the powerful Lord Torunaga, and then, as they say, it all kicks off. This is a classic tale of a stranger in a strange land, as we gradually experience through the eyes of Blackthorn the way of the samurai and the brutal, harsh customs of this mysterious land. Similarly to Dune, the world building and character development in this series goes above and beyond and will have you hooked from the first episode. The political intrigue, along with the brutal and extreme violence that populate the show, make it feel almost like a prestige HBO show at the top of their game. We are talking cinematic level battle scenes and visuals, all the while not losing its focus on characters whom we are drawn to and deeply invested in. Anna Sawai as Lady Mariko also shines throughout the series, along with a large number of quality supporting characters. However, it is Sanada as Lord Taranaga who draws us in and never lets us go. It is a stunning piece of acting. He is unbelievable. Having been lucky enough to see the first 8 episodes, I can promise you it never dies down or wanes. I was hooked throughout, and yes, some might say, oh, slow build, slow. Give me slow build, because, you know, the payoff as it moves on is just ridiculous. Anyways, another must-see for the week. The first 2 episodes of Shogun are now up on Disney+, and yeah, get in there, because you will not be disappointed. Finishing off our trilogy of big sweeping epics, if you missed Napoleon recently at cinemas, well, get comfortable on the couch, because Ridley Scott's sweeping tale of everyone's favourite small guy is now streaming on Apple TV+. With a budget of over $200 million, you can see all this money on the screen in the form of those huge battles throughout. However, be warned, there's a lot of soap opera drama between Joaquin Phoenix and Vanessa Kirby, but you know what, there's 2 hours 40 minutes to fill, so just be prepared. A quite enjoyable romp with, as I said, some spectacular battle scenes. That's Ridley Scott's Napoleon, which is now streaming on Apple TV+.
What I'm doing is for everyone back home, and that makes me very proud.
And your wife Lenka, of course.
I'm sure she's looking forward to having you home safe and sound.
He's not doing well. He misses his wife.
And he shouldn't have left.
In the new sci-fi movie Spaceman on Netflix, Adam Sandler plays an astronaut on a lengthy and solitary research mission, one that takes him away from his wife, played here by Kerry Mulligan, with whom his relationship is slowly falling apart. When he discovers a spider-like alien, voiced by Paul Dano, hiding inside his spacecraft, the pondering and deep thinking begins. Yes, this is not your funny, witty Adam Sandler nonsense. This is his serious, thought-provoking version of his acting, which, in fairness, he always has been very good at. Based on the sci-fi novel Spaceman of Bohemia by Yaroslav Kalfar, and with director John Renck on board, who has previously worked in TV on Breaking Bad, Chernobyl and Walking Dead. Sure, why wouldn't you be in? Did I mention slow, ponderous, highbrow sci-fi? Or slow-fi, as I like to call it? Ah, sure, go on. Have you met me? You know I'm all in for this, and I'm looking forward to a chilled rosé and sentient spider with a slightly creepy voice. That's my Friday on the couch. So that's Spaceman with Adam Sandler, which is now on Netflix. And for those wanting a less highbrow sci-fi, possibly more of a no-brow vibe, well, this week we've got you covered too.
You said you owed me for the time I did inside. Someone out of the city tonight. A friend. You do that for me, we're even.
I'll help you. My quick question first. What is it about me that you would choose this pathetic life?
Robbie and Stephen Amell star in the Netflix sequel to their 2019 movie Code 8 from the same director, Jeff Chan. Code 8 was a decent indie hit back in its day. It was set in the early 21st century, where the public becomes aware of people with superhuman abilities known as powers, resulting in the government passing a law requiring all powers to register their abilities. Although they are initially popular in the workforce, as the third industrial revolution begins, powers, however, become marginalised. Robbie plays a superpowered construction worker who falls in with a group of criminals in order to raise funds to help his ill mother. That first Canadian movie was crowdfunded into existence, and you know what? Netflix loved it so much, they greenlit this sequel. This one follows a girl fighting to get justice for her slain brother by corrupt police officers, so she enlists the help of an ex-con, Robbie, and his former partner, Stephen, to unleash hell on them. Quality, hokum, B-movie sci-fi nonsense. You had me at the Amell Brothers. And you know what? I thoroughly enjoyed part one in a trashy kind of way. So that's Code 8, part 2, which is now on Netflix.
Peter's dead, Jess.
Like, how can we know for sure?
Because of the finger.
Hi, officer.
What the hell is going on here?
We had something like this happen to us before. Whatever the phone on, we're going to figure it out together.
We need to back up.
Elliot, what kind of man doesn't want to go on a date with a model?
Dead Hot Season 1 lands on Prime Video this week. Created and written by Charlotte Coben of Stay Close fame and execs produced by Nicola Schindler, who gave us It's a Sin and Happy Valley, this Liverpool-based mystery thriller tells the story of two people, Elliot, played by Bilal Hasna, and Jess, played by Vivian Oprah, who are brought together to investigate the disappearance of Peter, Jess's brother and Elliot's first love interest, who went missing in mysterious circumstances 5 years earlier and left only a finger behind. I have no idea what's going on here. Yeah, sometimes it's just good to bail in. I get the impression it gets progressively darker and funnier as the episodes move along. And yeah, I'm going to go two-footed into this. And I feel it'll definitely be worth your time. So that is Dead Hot Season 1, which is now on Prime Video.
Local authorities quickly ruled his death a suicide.
It just didn't sit right. In my mind, I'm thinking they killed him.
The book that Danny was writing, he starts looking into these powerful people and realizes there's something much bigger going on.
These eight men, they're no longer government officials, but their tentacles can reach into any part of government in almost any country. I've come to call this group the Octopus.
American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders on Netflix comes from the producers of Wild Wild Country, including the Duplass brothers. And this Netflix four-part true crime series examines the death in 1991 of an investigative journalist that might be linked to a bizarre political conspiracy known as the Octopus. Shady as shady can be, this doc attempts to uncover new details decades later that Danny Cusolaro did not commit suicide and was indeed murdered by this dodgy, corrupt, government-adjacent organization. Absolute political true crime gold. What's not to love? That's American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders, which is now on Netflix. One for the smallies this week, Evaju on Disney Plus is an original animated series set in a futuristic Lagos in Nigeria. This exciting coming-of-age story follows Tola, a young girl from a wealthy island, and her best friend Kole, a self-taught tech expert, as they discover the secrets and dangers hidden in their different worlds. This is a collaboration between Walt Disney Animation Studios and Pan-African Entertainment Company Kugali, and all six episodes of this animated action series, Evaju, is now on Disney+. Kids Are Growing Up, a story about a kid named Leroy on Prime Video. This is an up-close and personal behind-the-scenes look at the life of Australian music phenomenon, the kid Leroy, and his journey to global stardom. Directed by Michael Ratner, this documentary takes viewers on a journey following the kid Leroy, born Charlton Howard, and how he deals with fame amid the massive commercial success of his Justin Bieber collaboration, Stay, and leading into his first time debut album, which arrived in November. Seemingly the kids love him. He's very popular and, you know, this actually looks like a half-decent, intriguing watch. And again, if you like your music docs, why not? So that's Kids Are Growing Up, a story about a kid named Leroy, which is on Prime Video. A bit more cerebral and, Lord, help us all. If you were invested in the madness that was J-Lo's musical movie, This Is Me, Now a Love Story, then, yes, the treats keep on coming in the form of The Greatest Love Story Never Told on Prime Video, which follows J-Lo as she attempts her most daring project yet, independently producing a new album and cinematic original that explore her 20-year journey to self-love. Absolute bananas in pajama stuff, but you get to see behind the curtain of one of pop's biggest icons. So listen, you're either in or you're out. Obviously, Prime Video are all aboard the J-Lo train. That's the greatest love story never told, which is now streaming. And you know what? It's most likely to be a lot better than This Is Me Now, a love story. Just saying. Moving into the non-English section. First up, we have The Furies on Netflix. This French series tells the story of Lina, a young woman seeking to avenge her father's death. Furies plunges us into the dark heart of the Paris criminal underworld, where she meets Fury, a boss of this hazardous environment. This 8-episode series follows her through this intense, action-packed, violent journey. And yeah, we're all in. That's The Furies, which is now on Netflix. More tales of revenge this week comes in the form of Korean revenge drama series Wonderful World on Disney+. It tells the story of Yoon Sun-hyun, a successful female professor of psychology and writer whose life unravels after her son is murdered. Driven to despair, Soo-hyun becomes consumed by revenge. Yes, K-drama, Disney+, what can go wrong? That's Wonderful World. You Are Not Alone, Fighting the Wolfpack is a new Spanish documentary on Netflix, which through key testimonies looks at a gang rape that took place during the 2016 San Fermín Festival and sparked protests worldwide. Produced in secret, it is a deconstruction of the case that led to Spain's first Me Too reckoning and sparked discussions across Latin America. That's You Are Not Alone, Fighting the Wolfpack, which is now on Netflix. The Parades on Netflix is a new Japanese movie where a mother searches for her missing son after a devastating calamity, only to realise that she has died and is now confined to a realm of restless spirits. Full on woo-woo afterlife tearjerker here, that's The Parades from Japan, which is now on Netflix. And finally, in the non-English section this week, we have the third and final season of Polish crime drama, The Mire. All 3 seasons are now on Netflix, originally set in the early 80s. In season 1, in a Polish town, a prostitute and youth leader are found killed, but the police's handling of the case makes 2 journalists quite suspicious. It moved to 1997 for season 2, and now the final season lands as The Mire Millennium as it moves into the noughties. A hit show in Poland, and if you're looking for something dark, moody and quite crimey, that's The Mire from Poland, whose 3 seasons are now all up on Netflix.
I know what you're thinking. Who is this guy with the incredible cheekbones? Where does he get his hair done? One day, I'll be the most famous highwayman in all of England.
You are literally about to be hanged, you idiot!
Quick note to my gang. If you were planning a rescue, now would be a good time. No!
You've probably heard of me. Dick Turpin, new leader of the Essex gang.
Highwaymen murder and rob.
You're not a highwayman, Dick.
I've got this. We strike on 3. 1, 2... We'll get the next one.
And finally on streaming this week, we have Apple's new British comedy, The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin, which is an irreverent take on the tales of the legendary English outlaw Dick Turpin, who here is played by Noel Fielding, a reluctant leader of a gang of rogues who sets out on a series of wild adventures, all while trying to outwit the corrupt lawman and thief-taker Jonathan Wild, played here by Hugh Bonneville. Definitely much sillier than the Dick Turpin of my youth. Ah, that was a time. What a time to be alive. But we won't go there. We won't go there. That's a different story. This one looks like a bit of crack. You know, I'll give it an old dabble and see what it's like. That's The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin, which is now on Apple TV+. And that is your streaming. Yes, yes, some absolute box office stuff there. I'm telling you, it's good, it's all good. And speaking of box office, new music. Holy moly. Holy, holy moly. Rock bands, punk bands, indie bands, all sorts of bands. There are some absolute belters released this week. So let's take a quick look at what's hitting our ears with new albums released this week.
I
Yes, first up this week we have Liam Gallagher and John Squire, who released their debut collaborative studio album called, yes, Liam Gallagher and John Squire. And depending what reviews you read, it's either the best new music these lads have produced in years, according to NME and Mojo, or a derivative rock by numbers affair, according to Financial Times. I'll go with NME and Mojo, but that's just me. Ultimately, I don't care, because Oasis frontman meets Stone Roses guitarist, you had me at hello. So that's Liam Gallagher and John Squire, all aboard the psychedelic blues stomper. Next up we have Everything, released their seventh studio album, Mountainhead. The Manchester art rockers, always quirky, always quite complex lads. This should be an absolute belter. That is Mountainhead by Everything. Manic and Pussy release I Got Heaven, which is their fourth studio album, and these indie punk rockers from Philadelphia, like previous albums, this one features tales of anger, longing, religion, and yes, aging. Already obtaining absolute cracker reviews, they received their breakout moment when they were featured throughout HBO's Mare of Easttown series. So that is Manic and Pussy, I Got Heaven. And then one for the hipster skinny jean talk rock brigade.
Yeah, one night up in the attic, listening to Grammatics, drinking cans and shooting the shit. We reeled off all of our hopes and dreams and made a list. And there was one singular ambition we had that most musicians of our ilk aren't willing to admit. And it was to this mantra we would commit. We make hits to put millennial men. And we do it again every night on the back of the bus. You know it ain't no fuss.
Where's My Utopia is the second studio album from British talk rock superstars Yard Act. Rumoured to be a complete departure from their post-punk debut album, will they be accused of selling out by their hardcore fanbase or of reinventing themselves so as to keep being relevant? Well, we'll know this week when Yard Act release Where's My Utopia for your listening pleasure. And that is your music there, so off you go, and wherever you get your music, fill those ears with some quality tunage. Right, a quick look at three things we noticed in pop culture this week. First up, according to the Hollywood Trades, Paramount Plus have greenlit The Donovans, a new series loosely based on Liev Schreiber's Ray Donovan TV drama with Guy Ritchie attached to direct and executive produce. And even more exciting is the news that none other than Top Boy creator Ronan Bennett will pen all 10 episodes of the series. This extension of the Ray Donovan franchise will follow a family of London's most elite fixers where fortunes and reputations are constantly at risk and betrayal is around every corner. Exciting, exciting stuff. Let's hope this one earns its peas. Next up, we discussed Liam Neeson last week making his 100th movie, Cold Storage, on the Read It Before You See It pod. Well, it looks like Liam knows that his action days may be over and it's time for him to rediscover his comedy roots, as it has been confirmed that he will be playing the lead role of Frank Drebin in the new Naked Gun reboot, made famous, of course, by Leslie Nielsen. If you are worried about the car crash potential of this one, well, fear not, as Dan Greger and Doug Mand wrote this draft script, along with director Akiva Schaffer, all of whom partnered on the recent and quite wonderful Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie. If you have not seen that, it's a doozy. It's a little doozy. So that is Nemo going all Naked Gun on us. And then finally this week, we're going to call this section the new season Out of Stars Roundup. Maybe? Oh, it's not very catchy, but anyway. Hacks has confirmed that for its third season coming this spring, Helen Hunt, Christina Hendricks, Christopher Lloyd, George Wallace and Tony Goldwyn have been added, while for season 4 of Only Murders in the Building, it has been revealed this week that Eugene Levy will appear as a recurring character along with Ivo Longoria and Molly Shannon, who had been previously revealed. Due to land this October, ah yes, absolute carnage ahoy. One person who will not be returning to the Sex and the City spin-off and Just Like That for its third season will be the divisive character of Shay Diaz, played by Sarah Ramirez. The reason given by the creators was that they reckoned Shay's character and storyline with Miranda had run its course. Whatever happens next, fear not, because the dumpster fire that is in Just Like That season 3 won't be on our screens till 2025. And there you go. That is everything. We're done. Wrapped up like a bow. Just stop listening. go watch all the different things. There's too many things this week. It's amazing. Sorry, I was just stretching there because, it's me back. It's sitting in this chair. Anyway, with that, this is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast. This is David Callahan for the Here and Back Again podcast. Wishing you all the best. And until next week, stay safe. Oh, and you're going to binge happy. Yes. Oh boy. Welcome and hello there. Post-credits time traveler. Welcome yet again to the Thunderdome, where the year is 1979. New. Anyway, Dick Turpin is on our TVs and is a smash hit amongst both kids and their parents. Starring Richard O'Sullivan as good old Dickie, it was based loosely on the real-life 18th century highwayman. We were all hooked to UTV, ITV, whatever you want to call it, as this tale of a tricksy, cheeky thief stealing from the tough aristocrats. And it's 26 half-hour episodes which spanned four seasons between 1979 and 1982, when sadly it was cancelled. But that isn't where this rambling tale ends, no! Because the creator of the show was Richard Carpenter, who in 1982, following the cancellation of Dickie, immediately brought us a new sensational TV show to get excited about. And well, some of us were simply never the same again. Yes, oh my gods, Doted Man. I'm welling up here. Carpenter reimagined the Robin Hood legend in Robin of Sherwood. Michael Praed, landing on our screens, was instantly a star in this wonderful, mystical, almost pagan world of Robin Hood's. And obviously, Clannad's musical vibe definitely helped get across that mood for the series. Again, showing on UTV, ITV, it was a smash hit, and joined by his band of angry merry men, most notably Ray Winston as Will Scarlet, this series went from strength to strength for its first two seasons with its dark world building and retelling of this classic character. And then, yes, then, it all went to shit. Fans were shook. I, as an 11-year-old, was stunned and shook because Michael Praed, the hooded man himself, left the show to follow the money in Hollywood to join, of all things, Dynasty. What? As Prince Michael of Moldavia. Oh, for feck's sake. His career never fully recovered after that, and his last major TV appearance occurred in 2016 in, oh boy, Emmerdale. And guess what? In 2019, his character was bizarrely blown up in an explosion in a sweet factory. Oh, Jesus. I'm still shook to this day by that departure, especially as they killed him off at the end of season two. And as a kid, like so many others, was so invested in this guy that when the blonde and beautiful Jason Connery, yes, son of Sean, rocked up out of nowhere in season three as the new incarnation of Robin Hood, viewing figures plummeted and was cancelled after that very season. Oh, sad times. Creator Richard Carpenter was so shocked by the cancellation that he has since stated that if he'd known they were going to be cancelled, he would have married Robin and Marion before the end. Connery just didn't have the dark broodiness of Prey, and the show just felt off for that whole third season. The final insult to me as a young child was seeing Michael Praed walk onto our screen in Dynasty. Yes, we all watched Dallas and Dynasty back in those days. And to see him no longer smouldering with his long hair and grime on his face, but now with a tight crop of hair and dressed as a stuck-up prince. What? The poacher had indeed become the gamekeeper. I was young, so yes, I didn't understand he was getting paid feck all for this hit forest-dwelling show and now was getting paid a whole lot more for 29 episodes that he appeared in Dynasty. But all I know is that Robin of Sherwood was something magical on TV in the 80s and then was gone, and the start of American action TV shows infiltrating our Saturday afternoon brains was about to begin. And that is our tale. I was not in any way expecting this journey in the post-credits this week, but then seeing Noel Fielding all dickied up sent me back over the edge and down the rabbit hole. Earworm-wise, well, there was only ever going to be one song to play us out today. If you ever needed to know the influence of Dick Turpin on pop culture in the 80s, well, this here, Dandy Highwayman, is a perfect example. I'm still here. By the way, sitting on a couch on a Thursday night in 1981, I'm watching Top of the Pops countdown to top 10, and by number 2, this song still wasn't in the charts. I was sweating. I mean, I can't tell you how sweaty I was. And then the presenter said the words, and straight into the charts for a brand new number 1. And when I heard that, it was a moment in time, people. It was a thing of beauty. Yes, Adam Ant may have been a slight obsession of mine. We won't talk about my solo version of Prince of Charming in the school disco. No! And by the way, for Halloween, do not ever, ever use Tippex when you're dressing up as Adam Ant's Highwayman. That's just a tip from me. It's not worth the stress. So someone told me once.